Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong. Make you wanna holler and shout. Your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes down. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always
saying what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Keeping on, and that's what we do. It looks like McCullough won it tonight. I'm really surprised. I really am. I know there has to be cheating being done along the way, because we know for a fact, and this is not the Democratic Party. This is the far left that's taking a hold of the Democratic Party. They believe that ends justify the means. They believe that it's okay to lie as long as you get to the end that you want. They believe that it's okay to cheat and it's okay to steal because in the big run, they believe their direction is better, and as long as we get there, that's all that counts. We've seen that with Obamacare. You know, Obamacare now, his new motto today is, oh, I didn't say all those things. Blatantly lying. And so we know that they cheat. We know that they bust people in. We know that they double vote. And how much is controlled by things that we can't even see, you know? I don't believe that the country, I do not believe that the country agrees with the direction that the far left is going. I don't agree that they believe that. I don't believe that they want to get to where the left wants to go. But the left is really good at covering up what their end is, where they want to be. They did that with Obamacare. They knew they couldn't push single payer. They knew that the country wouldn't go for that. So they just said they didn't want to be there. But we know that that's their goal. And I ends justify the means. That's the difference between a person of faith and a person who doesn't believe in God when it all comes down to it. Ends justify the means. I'd rather lose fairly than win by cheating. Anytime, even when it comes to politics, if the three quarters of the country really wanted to go down the walk of the far left, I'd have to say, okay, I'm in the real majority. Got to go with what the country wants to go with. But we know that not to be true. Poll after poll after poll has shown us that only about 12% of the country has a far left ideology, and poll after poll shows 60%. Has a basic conservative ideology. But there's a lot of lying done in this day and age. There's the news media doesn't tell the whole truth. They don't ever go back to basics. And that's what makes this show special. Dan Wilson down in Florida, Jennifer Montrose and Stacey Tobush in Alabama, Rodney Stanhope out here in California, and I in California getting ready to be in from Texas. The one thing that hugely unifies us is we understand what the real message is, what the basic foundation is. That's why we all call ourselves Frederick Douglass Republicans, because we believe in some basic ideas, some basic concepts. But the left spends their time trying to keep us from discussing those. They don't want to hear those. They don't want to hear basic concepts, why marriage is important. They don't want to understand basic concepts as to why morality is important. They don't want to understand the basic concepts about, a federal government can't micromanage. That's such a simple little phrase. We're going to have a great show tonight. This is Parental Sovereignty Radio here on Continue for Truth Radio. It's our Tuesday night show. We always have a great time talking from Florida to Alabama to California. We had a great show on last night. Rodney Stanhope is doing a show for California. And let me tell you, last night really rocked. It was better than Hannity and Combs ever thought about being. We've got Brian has come on as Rodney's co-host. Brian is not a what you would call a conservative. However, he is not far left by a long shot. He's what I'd call a Kennedy Democrat. He believes in the Democratic platform, basically. He doesn't believe in a lot of far left. And they had a great back-and-forth discussion last night and are going to continue to do that each Monday night at 7 o'clock California time on Continuing for Truth Radio. You don't want to miss that next week. Be sure to click on that link and listen to the show and give a call in and join the discussion. It's going really, really good. And then on Thursday nights here on Continuing for Truth Radio, A Just Cause, Coast to Coast. And let me tell you, Sam and Cliff and Ethel are doing an incredible job. I am so proud of them. I've always said, Continuing for Truth Radio, this is more a hobby. I've got a good friend down there in Texas, Michael Smith, who's taken his radio network, his Blog Talk network, up to a much higher level. It sounds more like what you turn your radio to. We do this more as a hobby, and I hope it feels homey that way. On Thursday nights, though, I'm going to tell you, Sam and Cliff and Ethel are doing an incredibly professional job. They're doing it's just insane what they're doing. I am looking forward to many, many months with this. And then, of course, on Thursday nights, after their show on Steve Williams Network, the Underground Hard Drive, where I got my start in Blog Talk Radio, we've got the Free Don Miller Show. Two shows back-to-back about some very, very unjust situations in our country. Where people have taken their high position of being a judge or being a district attorney and basically abused it. And so we got seven men, six with the IRP6. You want to listen on Thursday nights here on Continue for Truth Radio to get that story. And the seventh being Don Miller, who's sitting in prison right now, 16 years, for a crime that was never committed. On that note, we want to break some big, huge news today. Ryan Ferguson, if you've been following that story, another wrongfully convicted, blatantly wrongfully convicted man, just got the news today. He is going to be released in 15 days. They have overturned, and that is exciting. That is not just exciting because Ryan's going to be get free, which should have happened a long time ago, but it gives us hope. It gives us hope that are fighting for Don Miller. It gives us hope for those who are fighting for the IRP-6 and some other injustices across the country. You know, it's a sad situation when we cannot trust to find justice in our system. You know, we were built on that. We were built on it, folks. And, you know, for many, many years, we have had a great, absolutely great justice system. And I don't want to see that fall in. I fight here on Continuing for Truth Radio. I fight with my voice here. I fight with my words on Facebook and blogging. For three reasons. I've got my three little nieces, and someday they're going to be 40. Someday they're going to be 45 like me, coming up here soon. And I want this world that they have, when they're that age, I want it to be a good place. I want this country to be a good place. I want them to continue to have their freedoms, the freedoms guaranteed in our Constitution, because I believe that freedom is what has been the driving battery in this country to make it so great. And have we made mistakes? Yeah, we've made mistakes. Have there been problems? Yeah, there's been problems. But we have provided a lot, folks, for the world. We have helped elevate the living conditions, the standard of living all over the world with our wealth. You know, we get mad at the corporations. You hear that? And I'm not always happy with the corporations. I think they get too big sometimes, and they're full of waste, fraud, and abuse. But let me tell you, it's those big corporations that enable to lower the prices on certain goods that for a dollar in some foreign countries, we can save a life, one American dollar. I worked in Trinidad and Grenada. And in Trinidad at the time, it took six Trinidad dollars to make one American dollar. And you know, I could hand somebody down there a $5 bill, and I covered their daily income for an 8-hour work day. And you know, we get so spoiled here, and we don't realize how powerfully wealthy even our poorest of poor are. So folks, this is Continuing for Truth Radio, and then on Friday morning, ladies Bible class at Betty's. Let me tell you, we're having a great time. Folks, if you do nothing else this week, just listen to one of those episodes and listen and get excited about that Old Testament story. That first third of your Bible is a novel. It's a mini-series. It starts with one man, Abraham, and it goes and it continues on through his family, and you watch his family grow into a nation and then into a kingdom. You find them in bondage. You find them in freedom, and there is not a story in Hollywood ever been done that can even come close to that story in the Old Testament. And it's fascinating. We come across a lot of rocks, a lot of windows, a lot of doors. We come across the concept of being in the house a lot. We come across the threshing floor a lot. We come across the bread, the wheat, the tree, and there's a portrait in that Old Testament. And we're looking at that portrait on Friday mornings at 10:30 California time, right here on Continuing for Truth Radio. So we want you to join us for all our shows. And then on Saturday, Lazy Morning Saturday, get up and listen to Dan Wilson, our co-host tonight. I'm going to hand over to you in a minute. Listen to Dan and I. Sometimes we've got a guest. Sometimes we just chit-chat. But you know what we always talk about? We always talk about history. We always talk about common sense. We always talk about the issues of the day and where this country was at a time when it was a little bit greater at times. We go back to that 1887 every week. Those founding fathers in that hot room in Philadelphia. And let me tell you, putting together that Constitution. So join us each night. Almost every night we've got something going on, or we've got something going on in the daytime. So join us and give us a call in. If you want to call in tonight, you can call us at 347-205-9620. Give us a call. Push number one, and I'll know you want to come on, and we'll bring you on and join the discussion. Blog Talk Radio is a live blog. You know, I sit down at my blog and I start typing. This is a blog where everybody gets to participate. And at the end of the night, we're going to have an archive show. And we just keep archiving them and keep archiving them. And you can go back and listen to our discussions. And we've had some great discussions. We've had some great candidates on. We're going to mention them tonight. There's a very good handful of people that could be using your support right now. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But get a pen and a piece of paper out. Or get ready to type in some web addresses, and we're going to talk about some people that we need to help win in 2014 on big-scale elections and on little-scale elections. Well, Dan, we've got some excitement earlier. We really thought that we could really pull this out in Virginia with McAuliffe, and it looks like, by hook or by crook, they won, which I don't like that. I really think we needed this win as a shot in the arm over anything. We needed that. But, Dan, I'm going to hand it to you for your opening remarks, and then Jennifer's in with us, I do believe, and I'll let you pass it on to Jennifer, and hopefully by then Rodney will be with us.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad to be back after a few weeks off and a little problem with the heart. But I'm raring to go again. And as for what happened in Virginia, something stinks. And I'm very, very upset with that. The other side, the far left, there's something called honor and integrity. And they don't seem to understand that. They would rather win by a hook or crook rather than being able to stand up with honor and say, I won or I lost. To me, those things are very, very important. And it's sad to see that the other side doesn't understand that. And we're also... this administration is once again trying to attack now our First Amendment. They're putting a outside company who is going to start going through and finding our sources for the news, and is going to decide what the public can and cannot hear. Total violation of the First Amendment. But this is one more thing we have to fight. You know, our forefathers put the Bill of Rights there for a reason, so that we could speak freely. And these people don't seem to understand that. So it's one more thing that we have to fight here. And, you know, we have Common Core, of course. That's an ongoing battle. Here in Florida, it's kind of half and half. And we need to really educate people what Common Core truly is. It's an indoctrination. It's not something to make everything even throughout the country. When I was a kid, we moved around a lot because of my father's jobs and some of the research projects he was doing. And everywhere we went, we had no problem. You know, we could pick right up. We already had a sort of Common Core. I mean, you know, throughout the country, you know, it was like first grade you learned your ABCs, and second grade you learned this, and third grade, and so on and so forth. There was, you know, there was no problem. You could move from Montana to Rhode Island to Florida to Missouri and pick right up within a couple of days and not miss a darn thing. So there is no need for Common Core. All it's doing is allowing the federal government to stick their noses into something where it doesn't belong and increase their power over the people. They forgot that we have 50 sovereign states here, and it's not the federal government that's running them. It's every state has its own ability. And what they're doing is they're bribing each state. If you go along with them, they give you money. If you don't go along with them, they screw you. So I mean, this Common Core crap it needs to go. You know, California, we're having all sorts of problems. So there's plenty on our platter to do, and now it's they've decided that cheating is the appropriate way to go. They did it during Obama's first election. They definitely did it in the second election, and this pushing for no ID. I mean, you need an ID to get on an airplane. You need an ID to get your driver's license. You need an ID to get your Social Security card. You need an ID to get into a bar, but you don't need an ID for voting. Something's wrong with this picture. And they're pushing for that. There's a lot that we need to change. They've taken the Holy Father and removed him from our country and pushed him over to the side. A country who does not believe in God is one destined for failure. And we can see that, you know. 8 years, our economy has not improved. They no longer say we're in a recession. but if you look anywhere from an economic perspective, you'll see that we are very much in a recession. We're actually in a depression if you go by the way unemployment was decided in 1980. They changed the rules so that to make it look better. This is what, you know, you look on the Democratic webpage and you get lies even on their homepage. 200 years of equal rights is nothing but a lie. We know that. You know, we're Frederick Douglass Republicans. And we know that 200 years ago, you asked Frederick Douglass if the Democrats believed in equal rights, he would have laughed. And he would say, no, the only party that believes in equal rights is the Republican Party. And we stand by our beliefs. You know, the Republican Party is simple, God and country, and belief in the Constitution. And we have to, you know, you follow those three basics. You know, you put God first, country second, Constitution third. And you have a winning formula. the far left doesn't understand that. And we have, we value the truth, and we value honor and integrity to get to our points. We would rather lose not telling the truth than win and lying, by lying. And, you know, this is something that needs to be changed, and we need the people involved, and we need the people smartened up. These computer ballots, the more I'm looking at them, the more I want to get rid of them. I believe we need to go back to paper ballots because it's too easy to manipulate computer programs. So I'm fighting for that now. And my battle continues, as well as, you know, our battle collectively. We have a wonderful group here, and I'm proud to be a part of this. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Jennifer and see how things are going in Alabama. Jennifer, are you there?
Well, I will tell you that it is very close. There are a lot of things going on right now. Right now, the percentage of reporting for the District 1 special election race between Bradley Byrne, establishment, and Dean Young, Tea Party pick, right now they're saying that it is 74% reporting. Bradley Byrne is 52% ahead to Dean Young's 48%. We as conservatives have got to do our part to get out the vote and inform people. One of the things that, you know, is an old strategy, put a third person in there. I believe this is what, you know, part of what was some of the demise in Virginia, is you have a third person running on the ticket, then you get all these Democrats to come in there and try to, you know, call the, put the votes in there to get the third guy to take the votes away from the main guy you want to win. And, you know, plus, with it being such a close percentage of votes in Virginia, you know, I would like to know how many of the dead people, what percentage of the dead people won the vote. You know, I would love to know what percentage of the voting machines had corrupt SIM cards in them. You know, I know that when it comes to politics, it's a blood sport, and the Democrats have perfected their ability to perfect voter fraud. I mean, we know that from the 2010 race between Sharon Angle and Harry Reid up in Nevada. I mean, that was just, it was sad. And, you know, we've got to get ourselves trained. You know, we don't need to be sitting on the sidelines. We don't need to be staying at home. We need to have a better ground game. You know, and I'm telling you, the thing that scares me is that when we get complacent as Republicans, you know, and we get tired and we say, I've had it, I don't want, I've had it. I'm tired of politics and the way things are going. And so they just get fed up and they say, what's the use? Why? But, you know, that one vote that comes in, that one last box that's being counted, could make a difference. And it could be your vote that's in that box. You know, that one phone call, you know, and there are people out there that are purposely, this is just sad. I mean, it's the attack ads and the things that you don't see in some states that you do see in others. You know, I mean, we saw that happen with Newt Gingrich. You know, the ads that you saw up in California versus the one you saw in the South, by the time you saw everything trickled down to the South, it looked so discombobulated. People didn't understand. If we're not careful, then we're going to turn our school board elections over to the left. You know, and the AA is going to have control. You know, and the left wing is going to be, I mean, when you look at what's going on in California right now, you know, there's a small percentage of the community, there's a small percentage of the community that's fighting their own personal agenda for males and females to have the same bathroom privileges. And, you know, I'm sorry, but in elementary school, that's just not something that, you know, that I don't think is right. I mean, and you've got a small select few people that want to ruin it for the rest. I mean, I remember when they were talking about, you know, PETA and the salamander issue in Austin, Texas. And, you know, they were taking a look at, you know, here we have a salamander that's becoming extinct, you know, and we're more concerned about saving the salamander than we are about saving the unborn babies. You know, things just don't add up to me. There are some things that just don't make sense. But if we can rock the boat, you know, and help to keep those low-information voters uneducated, you know, then we can keep electing Democrats. And so we've got to figure out a way to make a difference, to, you know, make a difference. And I think that, you know, we had an opportunity. I tried to put together a team that was going to go down and help find way for Dean Young down in District 1. And, you know, people just, you know, the times have changed. People that want to come out and go to great lengths and do what they did for, you know, for very little and, like they did for Herman Cain. I mean, we had volunteers coming out of the woodwork that were just all over the place. And, you know, but we've got to start paying attention to our local elections, our local races. You know, if we're not looking at what's going on with our children, what's happening in our school boards, you know, at the end of the election season, we're going to be shaking our heads again. You know, why do we have so many people stay home and not go out there, you know? So this year, you know, I'm encouraging people to get involved, you know, to make a difference, and why they should. Some people don't really care. They're tired of hearing about politics. But at the end of the day, I mean, you've got people now that are wishing that they had gotten more involved in stopping the Affordable Health Care Act. Because now they're finding that their insurance is being canceled. I mean, there's so much that's going on that we've just got to make a difference. We've got to do some things to take a stand. So with that, I'm going to pass it over back to Scott.
Hey, Jennifer, what you just said right there is key. You laid it out, I don't care what you stand on the issues. I don't care how much money you raise. I don't care what kind of professionals you hire for your social networking and for your campaign. If you start to think about any of those first, you're going to lose. You got to think about what Jennifer just said first. How are you going to educate those uninformed voters? The candidate that gets out and educates those uninformed voters is going to win. The one thing that I got, the biggest aggravation I got over the last 3 years of helping on campaigns, and there's been some campaigns that I've been really close with. There's been campaigns where I've sat and talked to the candidate on a weekly or sometimes even a daily basis. This is what I came out of it. This is what aggravated me the most about campaigns. The way they ran the campaign was when the person decides to run, the first thing they do is they sit down and he gets his group of people together and they start deciding who's going to do what, how are they going to raise money, where are they going to stand on the issues, and that's what those meetings are about. And those first meetings, if though you don't even need to touch those things, if you're not sitting down talking about two things, how are you going to organize a grassroots so that they can help you as you inform uninformed voters? You know what? Sometimes these candidates spend so much time and so much money preaching to the choir. They gather the groups of conservatives and they preach to them and they get applause, and that's great. I'm a public speaker and I have been for decades. I love to get up in front of people and talk. I love that. But that's not getting you votes, folks. And we're going to have a lot of candidates on over this next year. Especially starting in January, we're going to have them on there, and we're going to tell them that. We're going to tell them they got to go back to basics. They got to throw. Don't worry about money. Don't worry about money. It makes me so mad when they start worrying about money. Herman Cain, we took him at $10,000 a month is all he had running about in there. And his team of people that he gathered took him up in name recognition the fastest in history. And it worked. It wasn't because he was out. And now, I don't doubt for 5 seconds that they weren't using the growth to help raise money. And he did. We got to Florida CPAC, and the news media took it the rest of the way. And a few other people helped, like a female lawyer that shall remain unnamed because I don't want to give her any airtime. But, you know, folks, these candidates have got to get out. And if you're thinking about running, if you're listening right now and you're thinking about running, or maybe you are running, let me tell you, folks, don't be worried about the money. Don't be worried about what the issues are. You worry about getting out there and doing exactly what Jennifer just said. And that's get to those uninformed voters. Explain to them the basics, why we believe what we believe, and why the other side doesn't work. Their way doesn't work. Their plan, their solutions, they don't work. They can be proven over and over again by the same basic pattern to be failures. Their plan always involves a lot of lying about what the plan really does. We can look at Obamacare. We can look at Common Core. And Obamacare and Common Core have got a lot of similarities. One, they passed in public. One, they kept and passed it behind the closed doors. And we can get there. We can do this. But we've got to, and we've got to get a team of candidates over the next year getting out and educating the uninformed voter. Because I'll tell you, the left is doing an awesome job of painting the picture that they want, writing the narrative the way they want it. They're writing the narrative the way they want it. They paint us as racist. Had a discussion last night over the bathrooms here in California, being little boys being able to go into the little girls' room. Go to my Facebook page and read about it. Read that discussion that went on there. Right out, automatically accused of being a transgenderophobe because I stand up for 100% of the little girls in the public schools in California's right to have privacy away from a boy, no matter what that boy thinks. Now, I'm not going to judge that little boy, and I don't hate that little boy, and I'm not afraid of that little boy. And I don't want to step on that little boy's right to live life the way he wants to live. I don't want to do that. But I'll tell you what I don't want to do. I don't want to use a very, very stupid solution that only hurts the little boy more just so that the far left can give a finger in the eyes of the conservatives on an issue. And that's what it's all about. It's insane. We've got, you know, if I were a candidate in North Dakota, I'd be talking about California letting little boys go into the girls' room. If I were in Alabama and I were running for office, I'd be using that on the stump. I'd be using that when I talk to people that aren't going to automatically vote with me, that I have to convince. That's where the left wants to take you, folks, right there. It's happening in California now. It's going to be here in Alabama in about 10 years, 15 years, if you don't take the power away from the far left and hand it back to the people. It's going to get there, Alabama. And I'll tell you, I'm on a roll tonight, guys. But let me tell you, this is vital. The only way we're going to win this battle is if the candidates get out there, go back to the basics, and explain to the uninformed voter why we are conservatives and why we believe what we believe. And if they will do that, we'll take this country back. If we can find 500 candidates that will get out there and do that, we'll win this governorship back in California. Rodney Stanhope is right on the message on that. But if I were in any other state, folks, and I'm going to pass it back around. You know, you're down there in Florida, Rodney. They're not quite there yet at doing this. Here in Alabama, I think Alabama would have a heart attack if somebody tried to do this in Alabama. But Jennifer, I'm going to pass it to you first and then let you pass it to Rodney. Let's go around the other way. I want to pass it to you. Jennifer, you know good and well as I do that if we don't take back and keep back away from the far left side, that's where Alabama's going to end up. That's where Alabama 7 is going to end up. Because they'll turn around, Alabama 7 will just turn around and pass a local ordinance that says that. We see that happen a lot where they can't get state control. They're not stupid. They go local. But Jennifer, can you see that happening in 10, 15 years in Alabama?
Well, I will tell you, things have got to change. Things have got to change. The more we get away from the values of Lincoln, Reagan, Frederick Douglass, the more we start leaning, trying to become more conservative light, a Republican light, the more opportunity we have to give the Democrats exactly what they're fighting so hard for. They've got this, you know, ability to do the things that, you know, that we should be, you know, that we should be out there. There should be, you know, nothing to say. I mean, we should be out there to make a difference. Get out there and fight in the street. Do whatever we have to do. You know, I mean, we got to get their playing field. They're not playing straight. Everywhere we go, you're seeing just a high, considerable, you know, it makes no sense to me that if I'm going to go to the pharmacy, if I'm going to go register to get a driver's license, I have to be able to show an ID. If I'm going to go and get if I'm going to go and try to get passports to travel abroad, I have to have an ID. I have to show my picture. But to go vote, you don't have to show an ID. They're claiming. So I can guarantee you, in places where that would be allowed, where it has to be mandatory for you to show your driver's license, show a picture. How many dead people do you think would be able to vote? And it's time that we do things to elect people that are going to put this kind of, you know, crap, you know, squash it. Rodney?
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, okay. I mean, I agree with you, Jennifer. It's what they are doing, especially in the voting part, is ridiculous. I mean, I'm going to be interred in Rhode Island, and so help me God, if they ever say that I voted for a Democrat, I'm going to come back and haunt them. I mean, it's... this is wrong, and we need, like here in Florida, you need an ID to vote. I mean, you have to show your driver's license before you're allowed to sign in. And as I said, I want paper ballots again. The computers are too easy to manipulate. The far left is not playing fair at all. And they're pushing things that none of us, that very few people want. And, you know, what Scott, you were talking about the bathrooms. I'm going to tell you a story. Back in 1969, my grade school went up to Boston to the Wang Center to see the Nutcracker. You know, a very beautiful, you know, show, musical and ballet. And at the end of the performance, I during one of the breaks, I had to go to the bathroom. And I ran into the bathroom, and I see women there. And, of course, I thought I had gone into the wrong bathroom. I ran out, and I looked up, and it was, you know, the universal sign for a man and a woman. It was a transgender bathroom. And it took me 15 minutes to go to the bathroom because I was so embarrassed. I mean, it just, I hated it. I mean, because I wasn't raised that way. This wasn't, you know, something that I had ever seen, and I didn't like it. And, you know, you're sitting there, you look over at the stalls, and you see panties, you know, underneath, you know, it's like, and it was like, fine, I just gave up and got out of there. And that this was 40 years ago. So, I mean, they've been doing this in limited basis for some time now, and it's wrong. I mean, sorry. You're opening yourself up to litigation, and there's going to be all sorts of problems coming out with it. We have to change it. And I agree with Jennifer that we're Republicans. We are not fighters. And we have to learn to change our ways. We have to turn around and start looking at what our forefathers did. I mean, what did they do in, you know, when they were getting taxed? When they had the Stamp Act to drink their tea, they revolted. And they fought against it. You know, if we look at the Democrats, what they do is they come out in force and they start screaming over something and they get people's attention. Then all of a sudden the media follows that. And though I'm a pacifist, we got to start doing, you know, getting out there and telling people, you know, what the truth is. I mean, the truth is, you look at the, let's take the bottom 20 cities, economic cities, the poorest cities in our country. Every single one of those 20 cities have had a Democratic mayor for more than 30 years. If you look at the last time a Republican was in office in Detroit, it was 1956. If you look at Cincinnati, the last time a Republican was in office was in the early 60s. And then if you look at the top 20 most productive cities in the country, a Democrat hasn't been in forever. And that, you know, should open some eyes. You know, their economic policies do not work. Obama's been in office now, you know, he's going on his, sixth year? By the sixth year of Reagan taking office, the economy was well on its way to recovery. Jobs were coming out of everywhere. People were doing much better. And by the end of his eighth year, by the end of his second term, our economy was better than it had been in years. Why? Because he took economic policies. He understood, you know, he wasn't an economist. But what he did is he surrounded himself with people who did understand economics. He lowered the regulations, EPA regulations. He lowered corporate taxes. And, you know, just by doing those two things, that gave corporations more money, working capital, so they could expand and hire more people. You know, it's economics is not it's not rocket science. You know, if you give the company more money to work with, they're going to expand. They're going to put it in their pockets. Yeah, there's a few that might do that, but that's a very, very small percentage. The corporation wants to make money for investors. And the best way to do that is growth. And they do not want to take their manufacturing abroad because, actually, telling the truth, it actually costs them more money when you reduce the taxes. So they would rather do their business in country. And the only reason they shipped their manufacturing abroad was they couldn't afford to do it here in the States because of taxation. So, they would bring back manufacturing jobs, and our economy would improve. This administration hasn't done any of this. And our economy, you hear MSNBC go, oh, our economy is improving. It hasn't gone above 3.2% gross domestic product. And in any other economy, that would be considered anemic. I mean, you'd be putting, if it was a patient in the hospital, you'd be putting them on a ventilator and calling the priest. And they try to make it look like we're doing great. You know, if you look at unemployment, the unemployment rate is ridiculous. It's actually, in actual numbers, it's pushing 25 to 28%. That's what it was during the Great Depression. We have had higher people on food stamps than ever in history. And they're going around telling everybody how great everything is. Obamacare, they're telling everybody how much it's going to, how great it is and how much money it's going to save. As insurance companies are dumping people. better half's best friend just got a re-quote on her insurance. Her insurance is tripling, which shows that, you know, this administration is intentionally forcing the insurance companies to either drop people or charge so much, they have no choice but to go to Obamacare. I mean, it's one big fat lie. Common Core, they sidestepped us. They, you know, Fast and Furious is another one of their lies to you know, try to destroy the Second Amendment. You know, Solyndra, you know, was to pay back one of the biggest investors in the Obama campaign, first campaign. I mean, time and time again, these things are being, you know, are happening. Number one is we have to call them on it. Not just to say, you know, oh, Fast and Furious is bad and yada, 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 and then 3 months later forget about it. We need to go in there like bulldogs, grab onto it, and don't let go until there's a solution. You know, the same thing with Obama's birth certificate and his college transcripts. And we need to be there like bulldogs and just grab onto it. And when the press lets it go, we need to push that much harder, our representatives, to come to find a solution. Remember back in 1973 with Watergate. Nobody gave up on that until it was, you know, until they found the answer. And Watergate is a trickle compared to what this administration has done. We need to fight and not let go on these things. Then we need to turn around and tell these people why we believe and why we stand for this party. How Frederick Douglass, you know, educating who Frederick Douglass was. Frederick Douglass was the groundwork for the American dream. I mean, what he did proved the American dream works. I mean, if we go back to our forefathers, you know, and that hot, sweaty building in 1787, you know, it's probably 120 degrees in this building, and these people were hashing out one of the greatest documents ever created. And why? And these people came, they had to walk, they had to, you know, ride horses, or at best, if they were real wealthy, they took a carriage. You know, then go back to, you know, Valley Forge. These people were marching in the winter, barefooted. Every third soldier, they said, just follow the line of blood. These were poor people who etched out a nation and fought the greatest superpower in the world and won. And we can't get off our butts and get out there and, you know, educate. You know, everybody's so afraid about talking about politics and religion. Well, it's time we need to change that. We need to start talking about politics. We need to tell about what these people did, you know, our forefathers did. You know, how we won the Revolutionary War is we were such a pain in the British butt that they, you know, let's take the Battle of Bunker Hill. Yeah, they eventually won that battle. And the admiral's assistant said, yeah, we won the battle. Isn't that great? And the admiral looked at his assistant and said, yeah, if we keep on winning battles like that, we'll lose the war. And they did. You know, we had patriots. We had people out there who were willing to do whatever was necessary. They gave everything they had They gave their houses. They gave up their families. They gave up everything for a belief. And this is just, I mean, they only had one big beef, taxation without representation. We got a list a mile long. And we have so much ammunition on our side that nobody seems to be using. We need to use that ammunition against them. Bring up, turn around and say, look at the second page of the Democratic Party. And then educate them, you know, say, they say 200 years of equal rights. Let's go back. And then bring them right through to 1957 when Eisenhower put the first Equal Rights Amendment of in 84 years on the table, and how the Democratic Party filibustered it. You know, tell them the truth and say, look back. I mean, it's in the National Archives. And, you know, we have all the evidence, we have all the power, and we aren't using a damn thing because, we're pacifists. And there's nothing wrong with being a pacifist. But, you know, there comes a time when you got to get up and stand up for what's right. And I just found out that the powers that be lay up a certain, you know, they're looking at me and they're calling me subversive. And, you know, I'm being threatened right now. It's because I open my mouth too much. And that, you know, it, but I, you know something, I would rather give my life for something that I truly believe in. And, you know, I believe in this country so much. I mean, you know, I'm the one that tears go to my eyes when I listen to Red Skelton or when I listen to, the, you know, God Bless America, because this is such a great country. And we have done so many good things, and to watch it being destroyed, it really hits me hard, and it bothers me that I can't do more because of health. But I can be the cheerleader to push on people, and it's just, you know, we got to keep on keeping on. I mean, we cannot do it, you know, just sitting down nicely. We got to incorporate the same type of tactics that they're using. And, you know, I hate to say it, you know, when you're fighting against people that are not fighting fair, you got to join the club. And, well, we can fight fair, but we got to start using the same tools that they're using. And we got to get out there and say, listen, you know, every time they lie, we got to call them on it. And we can't just sit back there like a bunch of sheep and listen to it. We got to get out there and fight them. You know, when this administration breaks the law, don't let it just go off into the, you know, and be forgotten in 3 months. You know, what's going on with Benghazi? You know, I don't know in the time in history when one of our ambassadors were killed that this country didn't have a cow and, you know, go after until they found, you know, who was the culprit. Obama slept through it, and then he went on a campaign drive. I mean, what kind of president is this? This is a joke. We got to get out there and, you know, say these things. Tell the public. Don't sit, you know, don't go around and agree with the damn mainstream media. Get out there. You know, say, you know, what kind of president is this? When he allows his own people to be killed and he doesn't do a damn thing. He's worried more about getting money. What kind of human is that guy? You know, I mean, let's get out there and start really playing ball the same way they're playing ball. And back to you, Scott. Said enough.
You said a mouthful. But it's also true. And you know, when it, all the things that you just said, you weren't talking rocket science. You know, we're talking, you know, just basic common sense. And I just really, I really feel 100% confident that Matt Jenkins can win Alabama 7. I believe that Jonathan Barbee can win, be the public service commissioner here in the next year for Alabama. I believe these candidates can get out and win the vote no matter where they're at. In fact, I feel that Matt Jenkins has got the ability to win in Alabama 7 easier than we got it somewhere else. There are a whole bunch of people who vote in Alabama 7 who, if you sat down with them, they've seen it. They've been a Wayne Dupree. There are a crackpot full of Wayne Dupree's in Alabama 7, and all you got to do is sit down and talk with them. And in 2 years, they're going to be going, yeah, I used to be a Democrat. I used to vote for Democrat. I voted Obama twice. And all of a sudden, I get it. There are a bunch of those people. They're ripe for the picking right now. They're ripe for the picking right now because they don't want to see where Common Core is taking us. They don't want that for their schools. They don't want to see where the economy's taking us. They don't want that. They don't want to see the end run of health care. They don't want that. They don't want to see the moral values in our country destroyed and thrown in a trash can. They don't want that. Oh, I'm a firm believer that Matt Jenkins got a better opportunity to win in Alabama 7 than the rest of them got in all the other districts. If you'll just do it. And I want to take our conversation in a direction. For this next part of the show. You know, we talk about Herman Cain a lot. And I'm thankful to Herman Cain for a lot of things because, number one, Blog Talk Radio. I would have never been doing Blog Talk Radio now if it hadn't been for Herman Cain. I got started in Blog Talk Radio one night calling in while Larry Borkus and Stephen Williams and a couple of other people were doing a blog talk radio show for Herman Cain. And I came on as a guest and talked about what was going on in California. And it's gone from there. It's been insane. But I want to walk through how I got to where I'm at on a basic timeline, because it applies to Dan Wilson and it applies to Jennifer Montrose, because they took basically the same walk that I did. And I want to use the next few moments. I'm going to tag this show. I think it's a great show for candidates to listen to. If they really, really want to know, I think it's a great show. And I want us to go in this direction. Herman Cain built an incredibly strong grassroots. And he didn't build it. The grassroots built it. What Herman Cain did was he didn't micromanage it. He stepped away from it. In fact, he stepped away from it to a dangerous point, really, when it comes to looking at it from a political game. But they took a chance, and they handed it to the grassroots to just go and do. And because of a few people that were involved, Herman Cain ended up with an incredibly strong grassroots. I was able to raise $25,000 one weekend by just sending out an email. And like I said, the Cain campaign for a long time before that, of course that was after Florida, but a long time before that, were struggling on $10,000 a month for those early months. So I want to walk through this real quick with you, and I'm hoping that we can get some candidates to listen to this, because I want to give you a layout. I want to give you a blueprint, and it worked. It worked flawlessly when it put together, and it's the reason why there was a cane train convoy. And when we get to Jennifer, she can mention that and the different things that we saw that went on, some great things. I saw a candidate one night. I was watching Fox News. I got it off a website, but I saw this man that I'd never really seen before get up and absolutely say it exactly the way I knew it needed to be said to get the message out. He went back to basics. He talked about, he used great illustrations, Aunt Betsy and his grandfather's potato truck. He said, you know, the federal government just can't micromanage. You know, you might have a great idea, but the federal government cannot micromanage. And he hooked me. He hooked me. And at the time I wasn't politically active. I did whatever I always did when I saw a candidate that maybe I could get on board with and vote for. And I went to look him up, and I went to his website, and I didn't go to a normal website. I didn't go to a list of issues. I didn't go to a donate page. What I went to was a sign-in for Team Kane. And I put my email address in, and I clicked enter, and I was there, basically. And on that Team Kane, there was a little chat room. And that chat room was live with people at all times. Because anybody who was logged on to that website was in that chat. Now it wasn't, thousands of people across the United States just logged on to your website. They could communicate with each other. And it was a key to what happened in the Herman Cain grassroots was that little website, that little chat room in that Team Cain. Met Teresa Brusky that night. Oh, she'd smack me for saying Brusky. Brusky that night. I met a few other people, and Team Kane was awesome. It gave us an opportunity to create groups. It wasn't super complicated. Anybody could use it. People that didn't use Facebook or Twitter at the time, there were all kinds of people that were in there that don't do social networking. That was what was awesome. There were people that all they ever did before was check their email, but now they were going to this Team Kane place, a real basic place, and they were communicating with each other. And groups were started, some tax groups and some libertarian groups and some Catholic groups and some prayer groups and some women's groups, and you could join these groups. Teresa Brusky put together the social networking, media and social networking group, a place to go find information on videos and stuff that you could share on social networking, and people that were willing to help. I put together the business card group. We had people all over the country printing out these business cards that people were creating, just printing them out on the computer, cutting them up, and using them. And didn't cost them any money except for the ink and the paper. They didn't have to order something from Herman Cain and wait for business cards to come back, and they were spreading them all over the place, putting them in places. There were people that were really on board with taxes and the fair tax and the flat tax. There were those groups, and they got together and they talked about tax stuff and how Herman Cain affected it, and they really, really liked 999. And things were going really good, and we could go in there and we could use it. And something happened in the campaign office. The campaign really didn't quite know exactly what was going on in Team Kane, and they didn't know what was going on in the grassroots. But you had Brad Marston and John LaRosa with four-tier strategies. They've been on our shows before. They're great guys. But they put together a little thing called COST. Well, COST was a little group of some special one of us that were given the job of watching that Facebook page for Herman Cain. And making sure we helped get out. We were a little team, and we had, you know, there was 120 of us in there. I think there was probably 40 to 60 of us active. And there was all those people hiding in the corners that we never knew, that we knew were just Obama people and Herman Cain and Rob Paul people. We laughed about that. But that little group put together a little team that had their fingers out everywhere. All over the place. So because we were in there, we had some real good contact in touching out to what was going on in the States. And then one night, and I was spending so much time on there. At the time, I was nobody was there was no captains or anything, but we were meeting and we were doing things. And I was so involved in it that I would run across the street to church and go into the office and turn on the computer and open up Teen Chain to make sure I kept contact in there with right before church and right after church. And right after church that night, a good friend of mine, somebody that I highly, highly respect and love, Jim Rowland, he sent me a message. He says, Scott, he says, I want your help. He says, I want to set up state conductors. And boy, I was already doing the business cards, and I was helping Teresa with the social media, and I was in the chat room, and I was on cost, and I was doing this, and I was posting this, and I was already spending enough time. And I told Ken, no, I can't. Ken, I will be there right behind you, helping spread the word. But I can't. I cannot be cannot be a captain of the state. Well, somewhere in the middle there. We have to have Kim Brolin on one of these days to tell the story. It's really insane what happened between the campaign and the grassroots. But basically, the grassroots, that was a full-running machine, we were doing a big, huge chunk of the work, got cut off from Teen Kane. They couldn't get in. They couldn't do that. Oh, it was a mess. And I'm going to tell you, the grassroots hacked it. Went back in, got control of it, and kept going. Well, one night, I sat down and I went to the California page, and over on the side was my name, state captain. And I went, oh, glad somebody informed me of this. But Ken Brolin's state conductors had turned into a plan that was incredible. It was brilliant. And that was to put a leader in charge of each state and put county captains in charge and give them the ability to communicate with the people that were in the states and get things ready so that when Herman Cain brought his campaign into the state, you already had a network of grassroots that was already working. You could lay your campaign over the top of it and hire your people and keep running. And it was working. It was working back east. So I talked to Ken Brolin one day, and he says, Scott, he says, just start finding county captains. And I said, Ken, you know, you're from Virginia. You don't have a whole lot of counties. I have 99 counties in this state. What are you talking about? And, you know, we need two, at least in each county, some three. That's a lot of people to get a hold of. He says, Scott, you can do it. So I did it. And I started calling, and I started looking at my emails and finding people in the different counties that were hooked up in Teen Kane. And I'd send my information out to the guy that was in charge of Team Kane's, the technical part of it, and next thing you know it, that guy's name would show up on a county. And those people started getting in contact, and people started working. And that was going on in Team Kane, and at the same time, there were all these great patriots, like Jennifer Montrose and Kim Paris, and I could just name Nancy Hayes. I could name a long list, Laura Ricketts, of people that were actually out really, really putting stuff together for Herman Cain. And again, the campaign really never really had a full understanding of how much was really actually going on. Jennifer Montrose put together that Cain train convoy, multi-state buses, lots of incredible things, starting from there and going on all across the country. And what Herman Cain ended up with in the end was a group of people that were willing to work tirelessly for him because they were all connected, because they had the ability to network each other and keep in contact with each other and do things. There were state Facebook groups set up, and these people were communicating, and they were planning on the ground. Let me tell you, there was a Cain train convoy, and Jennifer Montrose is going to get a chance to talk about it here in a few minutes, and the campaign did not do that. The campaign couldn't have done that. And so, yeah, let me tell you, these candidates, the ability to build a working, hardworking, excited team of individuals to help you get elected is right there. I just said it. You make sure that those people that want to support you are communicating with each other, and they've got a way to do it. can't be just Facebook. It can't be because somebody put together a Facebook page for whoever's running. You got to really put your team together. You got to even give your grassroots some organization. If you're running in a primary or in a state, and you're just looking at the state, man, divide your state up and start finding people that will be in charge of that section. You find people that are willing and excited to put something together on their own. There were so many groups and so many things on the ground and fundraisers. And it just went on and on and on and on and on. There was always something going on for Herman Cain. We were involved heavily enough to not only see what was going on in the Cain camp. We saw a lot of what was going on in the Ron Paul camp. A lot different attitude than the Herman Cain people by a long shot. They were nasty. They were really nasty. They had a bad character on the part of the Ron Paul people. Correct on some issues, nuts on others. But let me tell you, Ron Paul had it going with his grassroots. They were connected. They were doing the exact same thing. I saw nobody else with a group like that. Newt Gingrich tried. But he really didn't, he never really ended up doing it right. He never really put his people all in contact with each other with quite that enthusiasm. None of the others ever really quite came up to what Herman Cain did. And Herman Cain didn't do it. What Herman Cain did was Herman Cain didn't micromanage. Herman Cain gave the tools. He didn't micromanage. But what Herman Cain got out of it is when Herman Cain then did need money, it was there. He could raise it, and he did. He raised it, and it wasn't easy, but he raised it. And Herman Cain, because of that, kept 30% positive intensity rating on Gallup the entire race. I've never seen anything like it. It can be done. It can be done, folks, if you will rely on the grassroots, rely on them, to help you get out and speak to the uninformed voters. You got to reach them. And Jennifer, you asked the right question a while ago. How in the world do we do it? Well, the first key to doing it is getting a team of people willing to help you. Because you can cover a whole lot more ground if you got a good team. Let me tell you, if you're a candidate, and the first meeting you had was talking about, well, what issues are we going to stand on? What issues? How are we going to put the issues out? How are we going to raise money? Da 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 da. If you started out there, you already started off on the wrong foot. Back yourself up and figure out how you're going to get your grassroots going, and you're going to get them excited, and how you're going to get them motivated, and how you're going to get them to help you get that message out, and then march out on the message. The money will come. The money will come. I promise. If you put your heart first. If you put the basics first, quit arguing. Quit arguing on some of this stuff. Just tell them, forget it, we're not having that discussion. Let's talk about the big issue at hand. It can be done. Jennifer, I'm going to pass it back to you and then around to Dan. I know I rambled there a little bit, but it was a plan that worked, and we all almost came in that way. I believe, Jennifer, you came in to elect Cain, which was almost the same setup. Same basic idea. There was always elect Cain and teen Cain. I didn't even know really about elect Cain until almost the campaign was over. The campaign should have put those two together. But I pass it to you, Jen.
Well, I will tell you, I have not seen a more exciting group of people that were so excited to see an individual get elected. I happen to believe, if I had to guess, I would say that Herman Cain was the level playing field to our current president. There was nothing that they could do to throw the race card at him. So it was inevitable to try to do all the necessary things to put the, to make it so that, make it difficult for him to win. So all the allegations, there's just too many coincidences, but there were people that were coming out of the woodwork that were doing all kinds of things. I mean, the banners that would be created over overpasses when nobody would recognize Herman Cain's name. And then we were talking about going to the South Carolina primaries. And I started chit-chatting with some folks, and I said, you know, why don't we create a Cain train convoy? Why don't we get people to drive in from all different states to converge in to Columbiana, to the state capital of South Carolina? And let's see what we can do to make a difference. And the next thing I know is that we've got people that are from all, like, eight different states, and everybody had devised a way that they were going to decorate their cars, their vehicles that they were going to, you know, travel in and stuff. And I haven't seen that kind of passion with conservatives, you know, in a long time. And I'm wondering what it's going to take for us as conservatives to get that excited again. There seems to be a lot of diversion, a lot of trickery, a lot of media trickery, a lot of media diversion that's gotten people so, I mean, what I think that one of the things is that we have a tendency to be at war within ourselves, within our own conservative party. The problem is that we've got to unify. The percentages in the beginning for Reagan when he ran for POTUS the first time was that he did not poll well. You know, the last time I think I saw a grassroots ground game that was pretty significantly powerful was when Ted Cruz ran in Texas for Senate. When are we going to wake up? I believe that we have an opportunity to make a difference. This is critical in 2014. You know, people ask me, who do you want to see run in 2016 for president? And my first response is, well, you know, I have my ideas, but I'd rather talk about what we're going to do in 14 to make sure we don't lose the Senate and the House. People don't really understand what all that means. I think there's, you know, even when we talk about local politics, you know, when we talk about, you know, school board elections, city council elections, and we look at failing schools, we look at the infrastructure of schools. Like in my county, in Tuscaloosa County, we have Holt High School. And it, you know, the school itself is the oldest. I mean, County High has already gotten a new school. The old school that I went to high school in for Tuscaloosa County High had a lot of asbestos in it and stuff. Why are we spending, you know, $10,000 on a tennis court in an area where it's, you know, in the hood, where it's going to be too expensive for anybody to afford to go and play in? When, you know, we're spending money on those kinds of things. And I just recently heard on the news where the housing for the college here at the University of Alabama is overflowing. So they're looking at putting a halt on some of the housing for students, and as far as the building goes, building, you know, facilities and that sort of thing. It's time that we gotta put our feet into action. It's one thing to be in our little groups on social media. It's another thing to get out there and be in the precincts. Go into the precincts and find the district and precincts within our districts, and go out there and start talking about things and ask people, you know, what do you know about voter fraud? You know, what are you doing about the things that are going on in your school? I mean, do you understand why that most schools nowadays are not sending homework home? And why is it that you've got such difficulties in the classroom? Now, some of it may be due to kids will be kids, you know, and especially when you go from elementary school into middle school and you're doing, you know, the transitioning from one grade to the next. But, you know, I remember 1976 when we had the bicentennial year. I was in the seventh grade, and we were all involved in our plays and planning and talking about the Constitution, and it was a big deal, and we were people were afraid of the United States. They didn't want to cross us. We were a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, and now we've got people that are lying about SEAL Team 6 in Benghazi, people on our own home turf trying to sell us out. And then we've got those people that say, because you know, I'm going to trust the individual because they have a D behind their name. And they're the very ones that's committing voter fraud. You know, and people just think it's just the thing to do. You know, Mary Jane and John Doe, somehow or another, that have been dead for 2 years, have been resurrected to go vote again. They say that this is just how it is. But, you know, I look at things like, you know, you've got a woman who is being charged with murder of her child because she was possibly using amphetamines the day that her child died. She got, and then she took ill, the mother did, and they were both rushed, the mother was rushed to the hospital and the baby died. Now they want to charge her with murder. But the things that happen on a daily, regular basis in abortion clinics are not considered the same. Makes no sense to me. Makes no sense to me whatsoever. It's a double standard, it seems. You know, but you know, you can try to educate people till you're blue in the face. But there are some people that it's just in their blood. They go to church, and they pray, and they preach, and they teach one thing, and they go vote something the total opposite. It's scary to see where our country is headed. And, you know, I don't want the Second Amendment rights taken away from me. I see where they had a guy in New Jersey I think it was yesterday's news, where this guy was in a mall, you know, shooting people up and, you know, shooting out the cameras in the building and stuff. And there was a major, and he finally ended up, you know, getting killed, the culprit. But, you know, I have to wonder, you know, how many people do we have here willing to play off an agenda for that as another way to take away our Second Amendment rights? I don't own a weapon. I have not been trained. I want the right to own one if I choose to get trained if I want to. I know that there was a mother who got trained, got her permit, and I think that she was showing the pictures of that, and she got barred from going to school, to her child's school, because of that. So now that, you know, we're exercising our Second Amendment right, our freedom, the right to bear arms, the right to be trained, the right to carry, and they are being denied. It's like now it's become like the scarlet letter A. You know, it's a travesty. Wake up, people. You know, I want to be able to live and do as I choose. And I understand that there are laws, but we don't need to rewrite them. We just need to abide by the Constitution. Dan?
I agree with you 100%. And the way I began into this whole grassroots movement was there was a Nashville group. It was Nashville musicians for Herman Cain. And I had heard about them, and I joined this group and started getting really, really involved with that. And found out this, you know, this Herman Cain, this guy is good, you know. And we had such excitement on that page that I started looking around. And that's when I met Dee. And Dee and I became good friends there and moved to another page. And then Jennifer and I hooked up. And remember, Jennifer, you and I had conversations that went on all night. You know, we'd be talking about various things and what we could do for, you know, to try to get this program going. And we also had Leslie and there was Kimmy involved. And, you know, Kim, I remember we sent a group up to Ohio, you know, and it was all these individual, you know, people. And Herman Cain, Mark Block was the only person who got in touch with us. The rest of it we did on our own. I mean, we went up, you know, a big group went up to Ohio, and then Kim starts this rally on her own. And it's like, you know, we're all sitting there going, you know, at first going, geez, that's a hell of a lot of work. And Kim went to work, and you know, sure enough, it all came together. And we had people all over the place trying to raise money for her and spreading the word. And it was amazing how excited this whole group got. And we are a member of another group, too. And both Jennifer and I are still members of these two groups. And they've kind of separated out, and they're still talking politics, but they have lost the enthusiasm. And I'm wondering how we can, I think if we can get another candidate that can excite them like Herman Cain did. Herman Cain stood for everything we wanted. You know, everything that each and every one of us wanted for this country, he stood for. And I agree, Ron Paul had a very, very strong grassroots movement too. But his people tactically did the wrong thing. They went in and tried to disrupt other pages rather than trying to gain the enthusiasm that Cain did. And that's why Ron Paul's group failed. And Newt also had one that just never quite took off. You know, but Newt's a great, you know, if people would stop remembering the Dole Pelosi BS. You know, he was actually a great man. Reagan had taken Gingrich under his arm, and really, it was Reagan's intention to use Gingrich as his protege. Gingrich, I mean, Gingrich has a wonderful ability to get both sides to work together. And, you know, if those who oppose him, and even in the Republican Party, there are a lot of people that still believe that crap that Pelosi and Dole put together. But truthfully, if he ever became POTUS, we'd have a second Reagan, I believe. He's a very, very brilliant man. And like all of us, he is a firm believer in history. And he knows history inside and out. And has written several books on history to educate, you know, to really bring back and get people to remember what our forefathers did. He wrote on Valley Forge. He wrote on Gettysburg. On Bunker Hill, all the major battles that we fought where we had nothing and fought against adversaries that were much stronger than us. And I guess that's one of the reasons, well, I've been a history fan forever. That's why I bring up the Barbary Wars and the 1805 war in Tripoli, known as the Tripolitan War, where our Marines took their first, the first time we sent combat units abroad. And it was to fight the Muslims in Tripoli in 1805. And, you know, if we don't know what our past is, how are we to continue on with our future? And what the left is doing is they're changing our past and recreating it to fit their agenda. And what we have to do is we have to take on what Gingrich is doing and bring back the past and tell them the truth. Tell them, you know, I mean, the real truth, even further than our history books taught us when we were children. You know, bring us to, you know, the freedom of religion came from Roger Williams. And the separation of church and state was Roger Williams. It didn't come from Philadelphia or Boston. I mean, it came from a bunch of rejects that were thrown into a little place called Rhode Island. You know, the state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. You know, the revolutionary, the shot heard around the world wasn't in Lexington and Concord. It happened in Providence with the Gatsby. And a little boat named Katie. And Continental Congress saw the idea of using smaller boats to get around the blockades, you know, of British ships that were trying to collect taxes on the commerce. And they purchased the Katie, one of the first boats they purchased, and they renamed it Providence. And that was the beginning of the small blockade runners. You know, we got to tell them that, you know, we went after and we found ways to get around what the British were doing. And then we turned around and we started becoming royal pains in the butts to them, to the point where the British tried aggressive actions. But we had been working with the Indians for so long and having our own skirmishes, the King Philip War of 1646. And we learned guerrilla warfare. We learned that standing in a straight line and marching at people is not a very tactical way of winning a battle. So we stood up in the trees and the woods, and as the British troops marched by, we ambushed them. And then we took off. And we became such a nuisance to the British that eventually the British couldn't handle the losses. And they finally said, to hell with it. And that's how that was the origins of our country. Is, we used ingenuity, we used, we thought outside the box. And this dynamic way of thinking is what created this country. We had two things. We thought outside the box, but we always kept God in the center. And, religion was a big thing for us. And, if we look back, at what Franklin said about when we were writing the Constitution, and how he said, hey, listen, people, when our butts were on a sling, we were praying every day. And we've gone over a month and we haven't gotten a damn thing done. Let's return back. Our forefathers, almost 300 years ago were smart enough to see that. And they turned back and they started praying. They prayed before every meeting of the Continental Congress, or Congress, depending on how you look at it, to form our present-day Constitution. And God answered our prayers. And we have to, for one thing, do that, is start praying for his guidance. And number two is we need to get that that excitement that we had during Herman Cain. I mean, that excitement brought us right up to the brink. Had the press and the Chicago 7 not pulled off their baloney, we would not be in the position we are in today. And our problem is we did not fight hard enough against these people. And what we need to do is the next time the Democrats try to pull off baloney like they did with Herman Cain, we need to get up and, face them head to head and then turn around and do the same thing with their candidate. Obama, we had so many areas we could have attacked and we left it go. This is, they have to understand that like our forefathers, the original patriots, that, you know, we're going to do what it takes to win. And if it requires thinking out of the box, we need to do that. I mean, look at, you know, the first things we should be saying, you know, as candidates get involved is, how are we going to spread our message and how are we going to get our grassroots people excited? What are the tools there? I mean, and I would use Herman Cain as a case example, you know, where you know, what were the things that he said that got everybody excited, and use them as a premise, and then turning around and educating the people of the past. Newt is still doing that. You know, we can't just kind of say stop with Frederick Douglass. We got to use Frederick Douglass as, this is the American dream. This is what the possibilities are, if you want it. But we also have to say, in order for Frederick Douglass to get to the point where he got, there was a group of people who were sweating their butts off in Philadelphia trying to come up with something called the U.S. Constitution. And before that, we had a group of people that were trying to figure out how in the heck are we going to beat the most powerful military on earth and still survive and still have people. And we have to teach them each section, you know, each part that you know, created this nation, you know, from the very beginning, from Roger Williams and, you know, the sinking of the Catsby and, the Boston Tea Party and the blockade runners and how we always thought outside the box. Because if we think outside the box, this is how we're going to beat these people. It's coming up with other ideas that they cannot defend against. And, you know, that's the way I'm looking at it, is that we got to start really getting people interested, excited, and also turn around and start thinking outside the box. How can we win? And with that, I'll pass it over to you, Scott.
And both of you, you know, exactly. You know, it's a race. The struggle has always been there. The struggle has been there in every nation that's ever stood. It's that struggle between the government controlling the people on a tight rein, or having a light control. You know, that was what happened at the end of Solomon's reign in the United Kingdom under Saul, David, and Solomon. They had a united kingdom, and they got to Solomon's death, and Solomon's son Rehoboam went to the older people, and he said, listen, how should I reign? How should I reign over Israel? And the older people said, you know, your dad was really starting to tax, and your dad was really starting to really hold with an iron hand. You guys, you better rule and give a little slack, or you're going to lose the people. Rehoboam went to the younger people, and they gave him the opposite advice. They said, oh, tax them more and control the people. And, you know, 10 out of those 12 tribes walked away at that. and Rehoboam took those bottom two tribes, and Jeroboam took the top 10 tribes, and Israel was divided after that point, never to come back. And in 200 years, the Assyrians would take those top 10 tribes into captivity, and in 200 years later after that, Babylon would take the other two tribes. And you know, it's a story that is played on over time in every single nation. And we can look at nations today where the government just controls everything they can, like Korea, North Korea. It's chaos there. There are people starving, and we can see the standard of living down in Cuba over that kind of a situation. And we can look around the world, and we can see where that side gets places. But, you know, we're at the top of the hour, and we're going to go ahead and say goodnight. It's been a long night. We've got a lot of stuff doing, and I want to try and get us off of the air before we go into that third hour archive and boot everybody off of the Internet. But it's been a great show. You know, we keep on keeping on. We opened up with D-Rock. D-Man, let me tell you, boy, can he write some music and some wonderful lyrics. But that's what it's all about. That's why we use that song, is because that's what we do. We keep on keeping on. Next week we'll keep on keeping on. We lost an election we really hoped we could have tonight, but we keep on keeping on. We just have to. Sometimes I feel like Captain Von Trapp. I'm getting ready to march over the hills into Texas this time. But I sometimes feel like, you know, we're fighting going in a direction we really don't want to go in, and it's up to us to get the country to understand that. So with that, we're going to let Red Skelton take us out. Dan mentioned Red, and we like to use Red. We had a problem with Red there for a week. He disappeared. But we've got him back, Dan. So I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Look forward to talking to you next week, and we'll have a great one. Red Skelton. Listen, my friend, we got some problems in our schools. What are we going to do? Can you give us some encouragement, Red? We need you, Red. Red, the table's yours.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer, and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Lasswell was his name. Mr. Lasswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands, one nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?